CBS Radio News now presents, in the time usually occupied by a Capitol cloakroom, a special half-hour report on the British elections. In this broadcast, CBS correspondents will bring you the late election developments, take you to the various election headquarters to hear the voices of Winston Churchill and other party leaders, and conclude with an analysis of the meaning of the day's results. To open this recorded report from London, here is Howard K. Smith, chief of our European news staff.
Winston S. Churchill tonight made an old familiar journey across London from his home at Hyde Park Gate to Buckingham Palace and to the bedside of King George VI. There, where Clement R. Attlee had been a half hour before to tender his resignation from office, Mr. Churchill accepted the King's request to him to assume the duties of Prime Minister and to govern the British nation. When Mr. Churchill's car came back out of the palace gate 3/4 of an hour later, crowds cheered wildly, waving their hands in his own famous "The Salute" at him. Another crowd packed the accesses to his home to see him return, and lingered there long after dark tonight, hoping to get a glimpse of the old Prime Minister who has become the new Prime Minister. These events have closed a tense, exciting day of shifting fortunes and the counting of ballots in the British election. When, after an early morning recess, counting recommenced today, the Labour Party was leading the poll, having captured 174 seats in the new Parliament against 145 for Churchill's Conservatives. Then the rural vote began to roll in, and the Tory score began to mount. By early afternoon London time, the parties were even. Then the Conservatives pulled ahead. For a little while, it looked as though they might run away with the victory. For by mid-afternoon, they held a majority of more than 40 seats over the opposition party. Then, however, the mining area votes came in, and district by district, the Tory lead was chipped down. Tonight, with only 4 more results in this election to come in, the score stands: Conservatives, 318 seats, the Labour Party, 293 seats, the Liberals, 5, and the small splinter parties, 3. That result reduces the Conservative majority to only 17 seats over the combined opposition. That is not considered to be a working majority, which would permit Churchill's new cabinet to govern and to meet the nation's problems with boldness. There's an additional moral weakness in the Conservative triumph. Their Labour opponents have won the greater popular vote, with nearly 49% of the ballots cast to the Conservatives' 48%. Thus, the first generalization that can be made about the British election is that it failed in its purpose, the purpose Mr. Attlee set for it when he first announced elections 5 weeks ago, to give Britain a strong government with a big, stable majority to face the nation's problems. What in fact has happened is that Attlee and Churchill have merely exchanged places. Instead of a weak Labour government comes now a weak Conservative government. The second consequence has been the almost complete polarization of British politics around 2 parties. The Communists were totally destroyed and won nothing. The once great Liberal Party was crushed beyond recovery, winning only 5 seats, half the few seats it won in the last election. Even Lady Megan Lloyd George, the daughter of that party's great Prime Minister of the First World War, David Lloyd George, was defeated. There is no doubt that it was the former Liberal vote which decided the election. The figures show that for every former Liberal who voted for Labour in the present election, 2 former Liberals voted for the Conservatives. The third most important consequence of the election was perhaps the strengthening within the Labour Party of the left-wing rebel faction led by Aneurin Bevan. All the candidates supported by Bevan in close constituencies won, despite many predictions to the contrary. While the percentage majorities of many Labour candidates, in fact of most Labour candidates, fell slightly, those of many Bevanites rose against the general trend. Observers here believe that the outcome will encourage Bevan to make a more serious bid to gain control of the Labour Party from its present moderate leader. To get the flavor of this day of electoral decision here in London, CBS radio newsmen have today covered all the main news centers of the city. David Schoenbrunn, normally our Paris correspondent, took his recording equipment to Transport House, the headquarters of the Labor Party. First, he spoke to Dennis Healey, the international secretary of the party's foreign minister, as it were.
Now, for a quick sweep to the news centers of London, my CBS radio newsmen covering this election. David Schoenbrunn, normally our Paris correspondent, took his recording equipment to Transport House, the headquarters of the Labor Party. First, he spoke to Dennis Healey, the international secretary of the party. Now, by recording to Transport House and David Schoenbrunn.
I am about to speak now with Mr. Dennis Healey, the international secretary of the Bureau of the Labor Party here, to find out what he thinks about this election. First, Mr. Healey, what do you think about the victory of the Tory party and the margin that it appears to be getting?
Well, it looks probable at the moment that although the Conservatives will have a majority in Parliament of about 30 seats, perhaps a little less, the Labour Party will have a plurality of the vote, and certainly more than the Conservatives. And this means, I think, that the Conservatives will not be able to adopt in Parliament a policy on domestic or foreign affairs, which is very different from that which the Labour Party has been following in the last 6 years.
They have at least a safer majority than you had. You've been living with a majority that's varied from 8 to 12. What do you think about the fact that their majority is larger?
Well, to be quite honest about this, I think it's probably a good thing for the country that they have a majority large enough to carry them at least through the very critical winter which we're now facing. I hope that after that, when we surmount the immediate national crisis, the Labour Party will start winning by-elections and we shall force them out of office again within a year or so.
Mr. Healey, your particular specialty is the international affairs. Could you tell us what Labour in opposition is going to put forward as its foreign policy?
I think there's no doubt that in opposition the Labour Party will continue to put forward the policies being carrying out in government. There is, I think, only one big question on which there's the danger that the Conservatives will follow a different policy from the one we follow, and that is in relations with the native peoples of Africa and Asia. If it's true, as was suggested a few days ago, that Mr. Churchill will seek to set up some sort of Franco-American-British body for deciding and coordinating the policies of those three countries all over the world, there's a serious danger that the long-term interests of the native peoples of Africa and Asia will be neglected or take second place. And I think one of the main functions of the Labour Party in opposition will be to prevent this happening.
Then you consider your function to be the watchdog of national security, is that it?
Yes, I think that's very true.
Tell me, Mr. Healey, what about your functions as liaison between the British Socialist Party and socialist parties on the continent? I remember in years past that you've made frequent trips to the continent at socialist conferences. What will be your grip now? Will it be more or less in relation to the socialist parties, which, if I'm not mistaken, are mostly out of government on the continent, too?
Well, I think we shall be certainly as active as before, possibly more active. One big change in that respect will be that some of the leaders of the Labour Party who have been excluded from working in the foreign socialist field by ministerial responsibility in the last 6 years will be able to play an active role in relations between the Labour Party and foreign socialist parties. But that, I think, is very important because the danger I foresee is that the effect of this very slight conservative victory in Britain will be much greater on the continent of Europe than it need be.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dennis Healey. That was Dennis Healey, International Secretary of the Labour Party. This is David Schoenbrunn reporting from Transport House, Labour Party headquarters here in London, and returning you now to CBS Radio headquarters at Oxford Street.
Next, Schoenbrunn fitted attention with his recorder as Morgan Phillips, the General Secretary of the Labour Party, gave the first official comment of his party as defeat became certain. Dave Schoenbrunn.
Speaking to you from Transport House, Labour Party headquarters, in the main tally room, there are about 100 people here, most of them are socialist party workers and some members of the press who are watching the final tallies being flashed upon the screen. In a few moments from now, we hope that Mr. Morgan Phillips, the Secretary of the Labour Party, will come down and make the first official statement of the party on these election returns. More press conferences due now.
our best prospect in this election is possibly to reach 294 or 295 seats. The vote that we have pulled is considerably in excess of the vote that we pulled at the general election of 1950, and is indeed the highest vote for any party in the country, even today. So it may well be that we shall emerge from the election campaign as the largest party in the country, but not with the largest number of seats in the House of Commons. I think, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, that's all I have to say to you at this moment. There are still a few more results to come, but the issue of course is not quite clear.
You want a question?
Yes, I would like to ask a question. Mr. Morgan Phillips, do you think with the results as you know them now that the Labour Party in opposition will be able to force another election to return to power before the five-year term of this Parliament is up?
I can assure you that we will now have in the House of Commons a very vigorous opposition, and the time will not be far distant when the government will have to come to the country in order to seek a renewal of its mandate. And on that occasion, I feel confident we can reverse this verdict and get for ourselves a much more effective working majority.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan Phillips. This is David Chamberlain reporting from Transport House, returning you now to CBS Radio News headquarters at Oxford Street.
Next, to Conservative headquarters in mid-London. There, Paul Niven found the Conservatives' pleasure at winning tempered by the realization of the smallness of their margin. By recording, Niven paints the scene for you.
The scene here at the headquarters of the Conservative Party is much less spirited, much less enthusiastic than it was 3 or 4 hours ago. Whereas this morning the Conservative lead over the Labour Party had risen close to 40 seats, it's now been going down as the returns from mining constituencies in Wales and the North Midlands of England have been coming in. Whereas this morning there were frequent shouts of victory as a Conservative gain from Labour was announced, those shouts are now much fewer and far between. There are many long, long headquarters. Their party has certainly scored a victory, but it's not the kind of victory that was hoped for. We're waiting now for the one further return, which will give the Conservative Party an overall majority in the House of Commons. Their total now stands at 312 seats to 289 for the Labour Party. One more seat will give the Conservatives an absolute majority in the House of Commons. And I think then there will be a big cheer here and a statement by the party chairman, Lord Wolfe.
Conservative election.
There you are, ladies and gentlemen. After 6 years, we've beaten the socialists. Give the party a cheer.
How this victory will affect relations with the United States?
Well, I hope that the United States will realize when a new government is formed, it will be a people who themselves know America, who have the greatest sympathy with the idea of a united English-speaking people, and that indeed is the most sure safeguard for world peace.
Thank you very much, Lord Wolfe.
A bit earlier in the day, heard the final verdicts of the voters in their district. This is a relatively formal matter, not common to the United States. Officials announced the gathered crowds who won. Here is how the ceremony sounded as recorded at Woodford in Northeast London as Winston S. Churchill received news of his victory.
Mr. Mayor, ladies and gentlemen, this election has been a model of courtesy and has maintained that high level of political work which our British tradition embody. I feel sure that there is no one who doesn't believe that true democratic process has been at work in this great constituency. It is now the seventh time
you have sent me to Westminster. And I can assure you, I will do my very utmost to serve the constituency without the slightest regard to party or voting in the constituency. We have all felt that we have a great deal in common, and now perhaps there may be a lull in our party strife which will enable us to understand more of what is good in our opponents and not to be so very clever at finding out all their shortcomings. I thank the returning officer and all who have assisted for the faithful and careful and efficient way in which they have discharged their duties, and I wish you all, whatever party you belong, good fortune for yourselves and for our island home.
Next, by recording, we go to the south of London, to the constituency of South Lewisham, where our recorder caught the scene as Herbert Morrison, Labour's foreign minister, accepted victory.
May I give you fair notice? This is a declaration of the poll that unless you give order, I will say nothing at all. What I was to do was to move the vote of thanks to the returning officer and the staff. But if this rowdyism goes on this time as it did last time, I will retire from the microphone. Now, I must now ask my own supporters, please, for the decency of public life, which I know you've been provoked. No, I know you've been provoked about, and I sympathize with you. But this is a democratic process, and I ask my own friends not to follow a bad example, but to give my opponent a fair hearing.
So CBS Radio News covered the headquarters of the leading parties and the scenes as victors were pointed out. But what did the average Briton think about the Conservative victory? Here, CBS Radio correspondent Richard C. Hoppelet, normally stationed in Germany, ran into what reporters call a story as he took his recorder into Whitechapel, a staunchly Labour district. The replies he got to questions cannot, of course, be taken as indicative of the feeling throughout all of Britain. But the depth of this feeling, as expressed here, will be a surprise to Americans who think more kindly of Winston Churchill. Here is Dick Hoppelet in Whitechapel.
This is Richard C. Hoppelet in Whitechapel in East London, the working class district. Here on the afternoon of October 26th, the word is now definite that Winston Churchill is the new Prime Minister of Britain. May I ask you, sir, what you think of Winston Churchill as your new Prime Minister?
Well, I don't think much of him.
Why not?
Because I don't like his policy. That's why he's a warmonger and nothing else. Plain speaking.
You think now that he's Prime Minister that war is nearer for Britain and for the world?
Yes,
I do.
That remains to be seen.
What do you think, madam?
That remains to be seen.
What do you think of him as the Prime Minister?
No, I prefer that thing.
You did. Well,
I did.
What do you think of Winston Churchill as your new Prime Minister?
I think the work was top before and will be working.
What do you think the workers will do? Is there anything they will do now that Churchill is in office again?
Well, I can only think that after one term, Labour will get in again, and I sincerely hope they do.
Do you think there will be strikes or trouble in the working class?
I think there will be, yes.
But you will wait for the next election to vote him out of office as he has been voted in. Is that the idea?
Yes, and it can't come soon enough for me.
What do you think of Winston Churchill as your new Prime Minister?
I reckon Winston Churchill's a warmonger.
What difference will a Conservative government make for working class people here in East London?
Make it worse. Wages will go down, and people will be earning less money, and they're telling us sweat like anything.
What do you intend to do about that?
Well, you can't do nothing at present.
What do you think of Winston Churchill as your new Prime Minister, sir?
I think that as a prime minister during the war, he was all right, but as a prime minister for the conditions of this country, he's not the right man. He won't have the right mentality for the countries abroad. The man that had the mentality, unfortunately, won't have the power today. As far as I'm concerned, it won't make much difference to me, because I'm lucky enough to be working with a firm who's fairly considerate.
What difference
will Winston Churchill make as Prime Minister of Britain?
He can't make any difference at all, as long as we can all live and let live, that's all.
Well, do you think you will be able to?
I don't know. I'm not that clever in politics.
Can I ask you, ma'am, what do you think of Winston Churchill as your Prime Minister?
I think he's very good.
What do you think, sir?
Very good,
indeed. I think that the people of this country will realise they've made a very big mistake in putting Winston Churchill in, and it won't be long before they know it. Well, now, why will they know they've made a mistake, and what will they do about it? Mr. Churchill's not a man for peace. He might play the great part in the war, but his past record shows that he's definitely not a man for peace, not a man for the people. And what will the people do about it if they find that he's not a man for them? Well, in the first place, I don't think that he'll have the people behind him. The miners won't be behind him, and the truckers won't be behind him. The simple reason that they don't trust Mr. Churchill. Well, do you think there'll be strikes and unrest? Very much so, more so than the bit in the Labour government. What do you think of Mr. Churchill as your new Prime Minister?
Well, I think he's a troublemaker, and he'll be in his glory of a threat of Russia at the first onset. Mr. Attlee's a peacemaker, and he's kept the peace all the time he's been in.
What do you think, Mr. Winston Churchill as your new Prime Minister?
I don't think much of Mr. Churchill as a new Prime Minister. We've had enough of him. He is a warmonger.
So much for the opposition view. The team of reporters you've been listening to have now come back from their beats in the city and are now foregathered here in the studio, a little battered and worn from a sleepless night, but still, we hope, alert. Each man has come to London from special duty in another capital and is likely to have seen this election in the light of this particular assignment. So now for some view. If I may start the ball rolling with my own view of the importance for Britain herself, I should say that I think when the smoke has cleared, most Britons of both parties will be distressed at what has happened. Not because one party or the other won, but because the party that won did not win with a big enough majority to govern with the authority the times demand. With so small a majority, Churchill will have to tread warily lest he's overthrown by a snap vote in Parliament, which would mean new elections would have to be held. Being constantly, potentially on the threshold of new elections, Churchill, like Attlee for the past year and a half, can hardly dare to take the unpopular actions that are necessary to meet Britain's economic difficulties, which are multiplying. It means that as in the past couple of years, so in those immediately ahead, a British government cannot squarely face its problems. That, to me, is the main point to make about the outcome. But Paul Niven here next to me has been here in Britain as long as I. Paul, what would you say about the consequences of the election for the British themselves?
The aspect that interests me, Howard, is the effect of this election on certain personalities. First, of course, is the new Prime Minister. Not in this century has a man of Mr. Churchill's age headed the British government. The duties of that office have multiplied over the decades, and they are further complicated by this close result. For all his vigor, his insight, and his unique capacity for statesmanship, Churchill is nonetheless a human being, 76 years of age. He may choose to share his load to a very unusual extent with Anthony Eden. Clement Attlee also faces a decision. Should he continue as leader of the Labour opposition or retire at 68 and become elder statesman? There's already a disorderly queue for the Labour succession, with an iron Bevan breathing down Herbert Morrison's neck in the race for first place. The longer Attlee stays in politics, the better Bevan's chance of succeeding him. That's how it looks inside Britain. Now the picture as it appears from across the channel to our Paris correspondent, David Shinburne.
There's at least one man in Paris who's been watching these British elections closely, General Dwight D. Eisenhower. And the election results today bringing Winston Churchill back to power will undoubtedly be welcomed by military people in Paris who feel that a conservative government will give more support to a rearmament program. As for the French, they're deeply concerned by the Tory victory. Even the anti-socialist French leaders are not greatly pleased by the defeat of British socialism today. They know the tremendous authority of Winston Churchill, his prestige in America, and they're aware of one of Churchill's lifelong dreams, the English-speaking Union, the partnership of America and Britain with the continent of Europe relegated to the role of ward of the Anglo-Saxon powers. The French know, too, that Churchill believes in a strong Germany as a bastion of the West in Europe. They fear the resurgence of Germany and the submergence of France as a minor member of the Western coalition. Perhaps our colleague from Germany has something to say about that. How about it, Dick Hartlett?
There's little doubt that the Germans prefer to see Mr. Churchill as Prime Minister. They don't expect any dramatic changes in British policy from the new administration, but they believe that the Conservatives will approach German and European problems in a different spirit. Nothing is more popular in Germany today than the idea of European unity, and Mr. Churchill has a reputation of strongly supporting it. Labour, especially when Ernest Bevin was Foreign Minister, was regarded as having definite anti-German prejudice. The hope that the Conservatives will be more amenable when problems like equal rights for Germany, the German contribution to Western defense, and the presence of security troops are argued out. Internally, the Labour defeat in Britain may take some of the wind out of the sails of the German Social Democratic opposition and reduce the pressure on Chancellor Adenauer's Christian Democrats. But in a country like Germany, which borders on Soviet territory and which considers Western strength a matter of life and death, there will be regret that so slim a Tory majority may prove an element of weakness.
Well, thanks, gentlemen. Thanks to Paul Niven of London, David Schoenbrunn, who's come over from Paris, and to Richard C. Hartlett, who's come to Germany, all come here to help us cover the elections in Britain. I think that we would all agree that however indecisive the outcome may be in preparing the basis for a strong government for Great Britain, however lacking in upsets and individual election results that make headlines, the counting has been, it has been a highly important election. An event whose consequences, even if they're negative consequences in the main, will be felt in politics the world over. And with that, CBS Radio headquarters in London call our election coverage to an end. But now, for the American view of the significance of these elections, I switch to Washington, Eric Severide reporting.
It would be misleading to say that policy leaders in Washington as a group are greatly pleased or greatly displeased by the Conservatives' return. They don't foresee any dramatic or sudden change in our relations with Britain at all. Regardless of personalities, geography, and the hard facts of world power, still make for a basic identity of interest between the two governments. But as some authorities here see it, the change of personalities and party will make for certain limited changes in the processes of realizing that identity. For one thing, the whole psychological atmosphere of British-American relations can be, and perhaps will be, changed for the better. With Churchill as leader, the present anti-American feelings in Britain will be dampened down, or at least people here hope they will be, and certainly much of the always present anti-British feeling in the American Congress will be dampened down. The Congress has always been uneasy about British socialism, and now the British Conservatives have a slim majority. And there are apt to be times when Congress will handle the British more gently for fear of the Conservatives losing their grip on Parliament. There are some other considerations. It will be easier for the State Department to deal with Mr. Eden, if he's Foreign Minister, than it has been with Mr. Morrison, who was regarded here as something of a bottleneck because he wasn't up on his homework. On the other hand, economic programs may be slowed for a time after Mr. Gaitskell leaves the Treasury. With Gaitskell, negotiations always move fast and well. There's a hope here that Churchill will do more for a common European economy and defense than Attlee did. He's expected to move Britain closer to American policy on the Far East, though there's some official apprehension that he thinks a little too much like General MacArthur on China. And some worry that he may only complicate things by his conviction that he personally can make the Russians see reason. That's about the way the official Washington reaction is now running. It's about all one can report with accuracy at the moment. But certainly the basic situation has not changed. America and Britain must hang together or run the risk of hanging separately. I return you now to CBS Radio in New York.
You've been listening to a recorded report from London on the British elections, together with a direct report on Washington reaction. From London, we heard CBS correspondents Howard K. Smith, Richard C. Hartlett, Paul Niven, and David Schoenbrunn. Eric Severide was our Washington broadcaster. Capitol Cloakroom, usually heard at this time, will be back at its usual time next week. This is the CBS Radio Network.